passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the 18 that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade Take the Mic.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Rewind to Raw. It is John Pollock and Way. Guess what?
What's that? What's up?
From 2011 until 2013, are you aware that I did improv?
I am aware. Yeah.
How are you tonight?
I'm good. Thank you for disclosing that. You know, I think it's very responsible to disclose.
I think all wrestling reporters have to disclose their prior involvement with improv. Mm-hmm. I did not do improv with any professional wrestlers that I'm aware of.
Okay.
I did do improv at the same facility that one RJ City as well did improv at, but never did our paths cross, I believe, on stage.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Yes. How are you? You're good?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. You know, kind of a bit recovered from the weekend slightly.
I'm not.
Yeah, I could tell. I know immediately how John is feeling after, like, you know, getting onto one of these calls and saying hi to him. And I was like, John, how are you doing today? And John's response, I'm good. All right, let's start the show. Sometimes it's one of those.
Guys, I can't wear a mask. I woke up today. I was pretty out of it today. Today wasn't a great day. I'm just going to be upfront with everybody. But I'm here. It is our latest show to discuss wrestling. And we have an explosive Raw to talk about. Lives changed. Memories created. Legacies defined on this 180-minute edition of Raw from the T-Mobile Center in Kansas City, Missouri.
Well, I'll say so, certainly for, young Dominic and Rey Mysterio. Absolutely, lives were changed and memories created.
All 48 hours I was counting down to this Dominic promo. His new gimmick, he's a mute.
Which is similar to the gimmick he had before.
You know, he did plenty of talking, as I can attest to in his prior incarnation.
Well,
this one, not an expression, not a word, nothing. Just slick back hair and he's got his mamacita. Rhea Ripley.
I mean, all the words are in his head. You know, I'm sure he's writing great emo lyrics in his notebook that I'm sure you'll hear soon. I mean, we'll be talking a lot about young Dominic here. I actually thought it was a perfect performance for the role.
Well, we will get to Dominic. There are more pressing things going on within professional wrestling beyond that. But if you're brand new to the party and you're just tuning in to Rewind to Raw, boy, we gave you back-to-back-to-back nights. Here at Post Wrestling, Friday night, we had a packed edition of Rewind to SmackDown. That led into Saturday night, where we chatted Clash at the Castle, which feels like a distant memory at this point. And then Sunday night, after All Out, we went live with our pals Braden Harrington and Davey Portman for the All Out / Worlds Collide / CM Punk press conference post show. And we went through all of it. And today we've got a locker room. Various terms are being used to describe this, from melee to altercation. I want to go with skirmish. Can we use skirmish?
That's a new one. You're bringing that one back from, you know, the 1940s, I guess, eh? Skirmish.
I like skirmish. I think we can make that ours. So that is what we are going to discuss. A very serious story in all seriousness, but plenty coming out of just the past 24 hours. even since we signed off last night and had gone through at least the Punk comments and more to come after that. But that, I mean, you can say whatever you want. It completely overshadowed anything that happened on the pay-per-view. Everyone was focused on the press conference today and then what happened after the press conference involving Punk and others that, to me, it I do feel it drives interest for Dynamite, but I think it has totally overridden what was, I thought, a really great return angle for MJF, and it felt very reminiscent of Double or Nothing, where coming out of that show, it was all the MJF stuff that had kind of overshadowed anything on the show, and you can argue whether that was to the benefit of the company or the detriment of some, specifically Wardlow, who has recently vocalized his problems with how that all went down, and it did. I don't think there's any hesitation there. It negatively affected him.
Certainly, yeah. It's a little bit karmic in that sense. However, I think it maybe points more so to growing pains within AEW, certainly over the past several months, and how so often now it seems like things in real life are spilling over and dominating, honestly, the hard work that, everybody puts into the fiction and creating the illusion of, this story that they're trying to tell and the matches that they're putting on. For better or worse, we seem to be way more interested in whatever is actually going on in reality. So it's interesting. But again, John, just to kind of, do some housekeeping here. The two shows that you mentioned earlier from the weekend with our Rewind SmackDown / Rampage show, as well as our Clash at the Castle. I was about to say Crown Jewel. Clash at the Castle.
Who are you, Austin Theory?
Yeah. Clash at the Castle post show are both exclusive shows on the Post Wrestling Cafe, which, of course, those of you who are subscribed to us on Patreon will continue to receive those. However, if you are a YouTube person who somehow for some reason only exclusively watches us on YouTube, you can also now subscribe to the Post Wrestling Cafe by joining the YouTube memberships portion of our channel. So go to youtube.com/postwrestling. We'll probably come up with a better URL for it later, but youtube.com/postwrestling on your desktop, and you should be able to find the join button. You can join us and you can get all the bonus shows. Right now we have archives dating back to March, so that includes MCU Later, every single edition of Rewind to SmackDown and Rampage. Rewind Away is going to be up there tomorrow, our latest show talking about WWE Raw from 1999 in the Sky Dome. And then, of course, Talk, Ask Away. Everything is out there right now. It is $8 a month on the YouTube, and that is $2 more than the Patreon. So we still recommend the Patreon for the best value, but we up the price a little bit just to account for the higher fees that YouTube takes. So that is available for you. I also want to announce right now, for those of you who don't really like the Patreon or YouTube ecosystems and prefer to stick to Apple Podcasts, we're now offering Post Wrestling Cafe subscriptions through Apple Podcast subscriptions. So you can get all of our bonus shows through Apple Podcasts itself. You should be able to find it right now if you simply go through our feed in the Apple Podcasts app. So you'll be able to get Rewind to SmackDown. Again, all the bonus shows, including Clash at the Castle post show, Rewind Away, Talk, etc. That too is also $8. And of course, again, to account for the higher fees to Apple. So you can thank the corporations, but we still recommend Patreon. Of course, that's the best way you can go to support us. But some of you guys will really just prefer some of these other ecosystems. And that is the option for you guys right now.
Yes. Yes. Do what you can to help get Apple up and running. And hopefully that they will get through this year with your support. So, yes, it's just trying to broaden this to the most amount of people. And with Apple, there's a lot of people that just there's a comfort level. And we've seen just the numbers of familiarity that people have with that. And this is for the bonus shows specific to that. And then with YouTube, this is where we're going to be housing all of our cafe video content, including this week when Wei and I are going to get into a car together. We're going to drive down to Buffalo. Cameras will be rolling.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's been a while, I think, since you and I have taken a road trip in the car together, John.
I cannot remember the last time you and I have gone anywhere in a car together.
It might have been Chicago, honestly, like for All In way back when. So
let's hope we don't have a repeat of that. We'll be there by the time the next Buffalo taping takes place.
I will let you control the GPS this time around to ensure that we get there in due time. But yeah, we'll be recording an edition of Talk as we go down there and an edition of Rewind to Dynamite on our way back. So plenty of recording to be done and a lot of catching up for you and I to do on the way there, John.
Yes. So the next few days, so that Dynamite for Wednesday night, we won't be live minutes after the show because we will both be there in Buffalo. So look out for that Thursday morning for Rewind to Dynamite, and you'll get our live car ride version of Rewind to Dynamite. And Tuesday, it's the return of Rewind Away, number 115. And coming back, we are going to February of 1997, Royal Rumble Raw at the Toronto Sky Dome, where it was the first two-hour edition of the show, featuring a no-holds-barred main event with The Undertaker and Ahmed Johnson against Farouk and Mankind. And we've got Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels having a face-to-face in the ring. Very timely, I guess this week. And we will also go through plenty of interesting news items going on that week in February of 1997. A ton going on in the world of professional wrestling. So we will break down all of that on Tuesday's Rewind Away, and you can look out for that if you are a Post Wrestling Cafe member or a YouTube member where the video will drop.
That is correct.
Did I get it all right?
Yes, you always do. Yes.
Postwrestling.com for the whole schedule, full slate of shows coming up this week. You can check out all of those. But let's get into the major story, which is coming out of last night's All Out show. And I'm going to refer to Andrew Thompson's write-up of this on the site with a recap of some of the reporting from PW Insider, F4W Online, as well as Fightful Select. And also Stephen Milhausen of DAZN was also reporting on this today. And Andrew had written, according to reports from both PW Insider and F4W Online, there was a physical altercation that took place following Punk's press conference. It was first reported by Fightful Select that there were some in the company who were not happy with what Punk said at the presser. The situation involved Punk, producer Ace Steel, and The Elite, Kenny Omega, Matt, and Nick Jackson. The PW Insider write-up reads that Omega and the Young Bucks went to Punk's locker room to confront him. That is when the physical altercation took place with Punk, Matt, and Nick, but there's no confirmation on their end regarding who threw the first punch. Ace Steel arrived on the scene and got involved, but it is noted that his wife was in the vicinity of the incident. Steel and Punk are close friends. A number of AEW personnel split the two sides apart as they continue to shout at each other. Now, in F4W Online's write-up, there is a note that Punk threw the first punches at Matt Jackson. Ace Steel allegedly threw a chair that hit Nick and then proceeded to lay hands on Omega and allegedly bit him. AEW has yet to comment on the matter. Following Chris Jericho's media scrum, he whispered to Tony Khan, quote, "Some shit went down." As he exited the stage, Khan was present for the entire scrum and did not see the incident as it happened in real time. It was also picked up on video during the Swerve in Our Glory scrum of a security guard racing to the back that people have assumed had to deal with this incident that went down. So, I mean, I don't think we can get into like the nitty gritty details of everything that happened, but I think we can take like a large picture view of who was involved here. When you're talking about a shouting match versus punches being thrown, a potential chair connecting with one of your major stars on top of it, someone potentially being bit. You have the fact, whatever stock you want to put in the titles, these are three EVPs that are involved in this. And you can look at that from the side of the talent that is getting involved physically with EVPs, and the EVPs conversely getting involved in this. There's that dynamic to things. There's a producer here in Ace Steel. Like, these are people, and your top star, bar none, in CM Punk. So these are all people that, you know, have, you know, significant weight attached to their names or job titles that I cannot fathom how this doesn't go without some sort of response from the very top end of the company. I just cannot fathom that happening, but we are talking about four of the biggest stars in the company, and a really it just feels like a powder keg that has exploded, and this is going to require the most intensive management of Tony Khan to try and quell what has now erupted from. I mean, that press conference was just a breaking point last night.
Absolutely, yeah. As if like the evening could have been even more newsworthy than Punk's comments at the press conference. to, you know, hear about some of these reports from very credible sources about a physical altercation that took place, and the details of which I'm sure we'll learn a whole lot more of in the days to come. It is taking really like the events of last night from just kind of being a simple news story to like almost something of legend right now. You know, that's sort of like the critical level that we're kind of reaching at. And it is by far, I think, the biggest test that Tony Khan is facing as, you know, a professional wrestling promoter, as somebody who's a leader of a locker room that appears to be incredibly divided right now. How do you deal out punishment while at the same time, you know, ensuring
that will harm you, will harm your product, but
ensuring that your business is maintained. You know, we're right. talking about the four arguably like, you know, integral acts of various.
It's your world champion and your trios champions as well.
Absolutely. So you can't suspend everybody and willingly take everybody off of TV. However, you have to show a message to the locker room that you can't stand for this, you know, what is that going to look like? And it's interesting though, because like in the comments at the press conference, when Tony Khan was not necessarily aware of how much this had escalated, but simply after, you know, follow up to CM Punk's comments, I mean, Tony was asked and he had very much the attitude of, yeah, in wrestling, people and performers aren't going to like each other. And oftentimes that creates for great television. He was almost like speaking of it as, this is an opportunity for me to, you know, turn this into story. Does he still feel that way? Is it irresponsible for him to?
Oh, you can't say that at this point. Now this is a dangerous work environment. Mm-hmm. Like if you're talking about chairs being thrown at people, I mean,
if this was in the NFL, if this was at Fulham, what would the reaction be?
I would have to imagine suspensions. Like that. Mm-hmm. I would look at any sport and that would likely be the outcome here. The question becomes like, is this a tenable enough situation that you can, I think the best case scenario is that they're on islands from this point forward where they exist once a week in a building. They will not work together. They will be separate, which they are now, aside from the Punk Hangman program. You can never rule out at some point you could revisit that. I do not see that in any near future at this point with Punk and Hangman. That might be a very optimistic outcome after this. This could simply, you could be at a situation where it is ultimatum for either side. It's him or us.
It could very well be in that position. And whose side will Tony take at that point? Who is more integral to your business? It would be one thing if this was simply Colt Cabana and CM Punk, but it's not. It's, you know, three of your founders, three people with executive positions, and arguably the person who's done the most business for your company who is in the process of taking your company to the next level. The fan response to this, to me, has largely, as expected, I think, been anti-Punk. Is that how you felt?
I've seen mixed. I think some people. I think it all comes down to, you know, from the public perspective of how you read the Hangman promo that at least publicly started this. And I said at the time when it became an issue a couple of weeks ago that to me it's okay. Here was somebody that I believe was building a match. And he stepped on a landmine on television, whether intentional or not. He stepped on that landmine, and that set off Punk, and that has now, it materialized with the response on television several weeks ago that I thought was very. And you either view it as a guy that was totally unprofessional, or that this was his public response to a public line thrown at him in Hangman Pages. I see them as different because one was building to the pay-per-view with the intent of creating this hatred among these two that you are going to go see fight on Sunday. Punk believes that comment jeopardized their first $1 million live gate, which he did not expand upon. How did that jeopardize a $1 million gate several days after the promo?
It seemed pretty self-explanatory that he was like, you know, considering walking out and not appearing. That's how I took it.
That's the only way I guess you can read it, because it's a case of, like, again, if if you're going out there and it's and you're not scripting lines and it's, hey, you fire off at me, I'm going to fire off at you, you're going to run into this. And we've seen it come like countless times that there are going to be lines that you're not expecting, and suddenly it crosses this line, and everyone's line is going to be different when you're building up imaginary conflict that suddenly is based on one line becomes real conflict.
Right, right. I think there is sort of like a bit of leeway that you can maybe give performers when somebody might step over the line. At the same time, I think there are other avenues to resolve that conflict than, you know, throwing a tantrum and saying, I'm not coming to work, or I'm not going to fulfill my obligations and my contract and doing a pay-per-view that
is what had happened back in May, this is the go-home show. This is the Wednesday before Double or Nothing that the promo happens, and Paige uses the workers' right lines, which, let's be honest, like, I listened back to our show today, and just like, that was one that I think some people assumed he meant Colt Cabana, but it's like, we were as confused as anyone. Like, yep, you could read it like that, but I don't think anyone, like, it was not something where it happened and people moved on. It was not a line that I think people connected all the dots on, at least not a large number did.
Right. But it's also for that reason where, I mean, I could understand Punk's frustration.
I do too.
With that line.
I do too.
Because it had nothing to do with any of the story that you had been setting up before. It just seemed like a dig that was unnecessary, that did not necessarily even build that much heat. At least
no, it was a line that it was out of context. It did not make a whole lot of sense. And if you are giving some benefit of the doubt here, if Hangman is wanting to convey like a legitimate rivalry here with this guy, and your conclusion as the viewer is, oh wow, he stepped over the line, they really don't like each other, and you're playing with fire at that point when you are trying to simulate that this is a real hatred. Well, it's a thin line between simulated and actual, and they turned it into a line that set Punk off.
And if you're Hangman Page, do you expect any result but what has happened? You know, like creating actual tension, real life tension, non-fictitious tension between you and the partner that you're creating that scene with? Like when you're throwing out a line like that, you know, he's asking for people to look deeper when you're talking about workers' rights. You know, he's asking for people to kind of, you know, look past what's story and into the reality of CM Punk's role and how it may have affected the rest of the locker room.
It's also worth noting the timing of that promo was a week after the Sasha Banks Naomi issue, and Punk had, you know, spoken publicly in favor of them and backing your colleagues. So I imagine that as well, timing wise, played into Paige's thinking of using the line. But I agree, it was to me a line that did not it did not sell the show, but I can also look at him believing that it was, I'm trying to convey to the most ardent fan that, oh wow, he went there, and this feels like these guys really don't like each other, to try and sell that. Had it been a case where Punk refused to work the pay-per-view that weekend, I think there would have been great negativity towards Punk if he did not fulfill that. But again, that he didn't really go into detail. He just said it jeopardized $1 million house that was 4 days away.
I can't imagine any other form of jeopardy than Punk walking away because he was so pissed off. And, you know, all of this, I think this is what I think continues to make CM Punk such an interesting person in the world of pro wrestling. It's what also makes us love him, right? It's the fact that he's willing to stand up for himself and at any sign of disrespect. And in this case, sometimes that to the public might go a little too far. It was this sign of disrespect big enough for somebody to threaten to walk out of the show? To him, it was, but so, to others, no.
So just going through the timeline. So they have the match. Punk wins. Wednesday, they're at the Forum. And that's the show where Punk breaks his foot in the match, where he jumps off the stage, breaks his foot. And then Friday is the Rampage. And Hangman was off the show that Wednesday. So Friday, Punk gives up the title, announce, or they create the interim championship. He announces the injury, and then they state that the battle royal is going to happen the following Wednesday. So Wednesday is when Hangman is brought back onto television, but he's not in the battle royal, as we pointed out. And it made no sense. Why is Hangman not in the battle royal? And if you remember, he wins his match and then does the promo and alludes to, I'm probably not going to be getting a title match anytime soon. And that was never contextualized or followed up on. And I imagine that that is the line that's been used because Punk was not there that week. That's the only thing I can imagine is the line that was being brought up, that Punk was not around to respond to, even though I didn't necessarily take that. I mean, you could. They weren't at that point building towards that match. Punk is out, and the line really made no sense within the body of the television program.
Right. And given the context of, I think, what the workers' rights line from several months back, I guess you can understand why, you know, Punk would take a special offense to that subliminal, as you know, rap fans might call these. And it's really kind of played itself out on TV in such spectacular ways that I don't know how Tony will respond, because in the same time where I think we're looking for, you know, professional sort of like punishment, or at least like penalties being put on people like this for speaking out on TV like this, or in press conferences, at the same time, he's been looking for magic like this to take his product to the next level. He talked about it in the press conference yesterday. Sean versus Brett, you know, was sort of like to him almost like maybe something that was a bit of a hallmark in helping establish, obviously, the McMahon character and also the Attitude Era. He's been looking for something like this. And look how much time we're spending talking about it. Look how much time the audience is spending, talking about this thing beyond what took place at All Out. It's like the ingredient that I feel like he's just at the same time salivating about how he can make money off of this. So, you know, Wednesday is a show that I'm really grateful that we are going to, John, live, because I think the public reaction will be huge. I think it'll be nothing but reaction to this. So I'll be interested to see how AEW shuts it down.
I just don't know, like, where. Like, this is the whole problem. And this is where, like, of course, whenever stuff like this happens, you are going to have a segment that it's just everything's a work. And you can't get through to that segment of people that are going to view it like that.
But you're right to be skeptical at times, because this is professional wrestling. And I think.
But this one makes no sense, because you have brought back MJF. You had this program in place. This has done damage. Maybe the program turns out fine, but for at least the short term of that buzz you wanted coming off that pay-per-view, that you put this guy on the sidelines for 3 months to build up to this night of him coming back, and that's our final visual, and within an hour, but it's greatly downplayed after all of this happens. Like, the timing of this contradicts your big story that you're doing with Punk, and
agreed. I think so much of what we've been seeing right now with Punk and with MJF are perhaps things that have started off very real, but will be used to blur the lines to create fiction, as we've seen with Brett and Sean, you know, as we've seen with everything else. That's just kind of like the nature of professional wrestling. It's not a black and white matter, you know, like not everything is being like secretly planned in a room, and not everything is completely real. But I'm kind of past that argument myself, John, you know, like I think like people let's like kind of move on and like talk about this knowing what we believe to be the truth, and that the tension here is very real.
So the next question then becomes, and just to, I guess you also have to look at just the handling of all of this, because these months go by, Punk comes back and he does the promo on Hangman in the ring, calling him out. To me at that point, like, that was, if you want to look at this, if you like, that is strike one for Punk. And I think strike two was last night. And you might argue that the locker room stuff, depending on who the instigator was, like, does that become another strike in all of this? To me, it never should have got to the point that last night erupted into. After that promo several weeks ago, first of all, the fact that all of this was boiling after the Hangman promo, this is where, you know, there needed to be some kind of understanding so that that promo never happens in the ring from Punk calling out one of your baby faces to the surprise of everybody and making your baby face look like an utter fool on television, regardless of whether Punk feels he's justified or not. If I'm the executive producer of this show, there is no way that you are doing that to one of my central figures. And we do not know what is happening on our television. And you are calling out this challenge out of nowhere, justified or not, in your mind.
Right. Now, would you say the same thing for Hangman's line from the prior promo?
I have a lot more leeway on that line, given that they were working together. They were working towards...
Not that one, but the what about the other one about not getting a title shot anytime soon?
If that was a completely improvised line and we're not going towards that match, that's a fair one too. Yeah. I don't
so
think that's
subtle
one.
That
it's, like, it's subtle enough that you understand why it probably, it didn't get a lot of attention. Like, it was not this big controversy coming out of it. Like, we noted it. But you also believe, okay, they're planting a seed for a rematch down the road or something. But the way it positioned Punk was that he's shutting Hangman out of the title picture and it's like healing Punk. So that's fair comment too. But again, we're talking about this company that one of the selling features was we don't script promos. We don't have writers. We let the artists write their music. And now they're writing music that we want to have a better control of. Now the record company wants to have a say in the rap lyrics.
Totally. Yeah.
This diss track is too close to the bone.
Yeah. Again, though, like, that's a wonderful analogy, because to me, one of the things that, you know, deepened my whole love of hip hop are real life beefs, you know, Tupac and Biggie, Nas and Jay-Z. You know, these are things that I think are still stuff of legend that really take the industry and the companies or their art forms to the next level. So, again, I there's a big part of me that thinks Tony Khan right now is thinking about ways he could turn this into art, how he could make money off of this. And I also feel like, as tense as maybe things may be between, you know, Punk and the Elite, somewhere down the line, I believe this will be turned into business.
You always have to keep that door open in professional wrestling. I don't think that that's happening in the immediate future. But do you look at this as, again, you have four major stars that are at the center of this, that it is going to do your program no good to send either side away for any time being. But at the same time, what message does it send to, I don't know how you can turn a blind eye to this. It's, and believe me, it's, I understand the nature that, you know, everyone is bringing up, well, you just suspended Eddie Kingston. There is going to be there is a star system in pro wrestling, and the bigger star is going to have the bigger rope. That's just the reality of things. And you can disagree with it. You can say it's unfair. Wrestling is unfair. It is. Mm-hmm. That said, I feel like once we're talking beyond just like that press conference alone, you could certainly argue like that was a very unprofessional, not so much him defending himself about the Cabana stuff and addressing it. He has a right to defend himself, but then to run down your EVPs in a roundabout way, pretty much insulting Tony Khan, who put those people in those places. Like, that was, I think it made the company look really bad to have your top star just pretty much paint your company as amateur hour.
There's no doubt. Absolutely. But is it a punishable offense? You know, is it wrong for a man with a live microphone to speak out his grievances? This is CM Punk we're talking about here. It adds to the fact that, I mean, Tony, not to mention the fact that Tony Khan was right next to him, basically kind of like almost kind of, I wouldn't say nodding in agreement, but certainly not looking, upset.
I do not think he was comfortable in that position. I don't think he wanted to sell his emotion. But
it's bad for him to come out after this to say, I'm going to punish you for saying these things, even though in the moment I let you go ahead and say as much as you wanted to.
Fair enough. But I think at that point, it's...
I don't think you can retroactively punish him for that, you know, when Tony was right there kind of like almost complicit to it all.
Well, I don't think the... I didn't think the press conference was going to lead to action. Especially,
but the physical alteration is a different story. Absolutely.
We're in a different area code of seriousness.
I think he needs to take a stand and for the integrity of his business to show his, you know, bosses at Warner that this is a professional company. You have to suspend everybody who was involved in this. I mean, obviously do your due diligence in a proper investigation, but when it escalates to physical altercation, you have to take a stand. And no matter what, how big of a star player this person is for your team, you got to suspend them. You got to deal appropriate penalties. You have a big enough roster. You just kind of went through a whole, you know, summer without Kenny and without Punk. What's a few more, I don't know, months or something like that. Dish out the appropriate penalties. And then from that point on, you know, see if you can work things out and turn it into art.
Do you at all, and again, people are going to look at like the EVP titles of like how significant those titles are, but they are titles. They hold technically executive positions in the company. Do you hold those three to a higher standard that as opposed to this just being wrestlers on equal footing in the company getting into a backstage skirmish?
I hold wrestlers to a higher standard. I think you have to.
That's a good answer.
Professional environment like this, you know, whether you're an executive or not, if you're an adult working in a professional environment, you cannot be throwing fists. That's unacceptable anywhere. So, you know, the EVP titles, I think, are also interesting, too, because at this point, we don't exactly even know what that entails, John. You know, from what we hear, it's greatly diminished from like what it was, you know, when the company began. So at this point, what does it even mean to be an EVP for the company?
I mean, there it may very well just, you know, in terms of the benefits that comes with. Like, is this something like they could lose their EVP titles over that may have like very tangible benefits attached to it versus a wrestler contract? Like, this is something where if you remember way back in the mid 90s when Vader and Paul Orndorff got into that big fight backstage, it was like a lot of it was on like Paul Orndorff like fighting Vader. It's like, you're the road agent here. You are in the position with the office that you should be the cooler head here in this kind of a situation. And even though it goes down as this legendary story about him like beating up Vader, and again, like, it's I can understand having this kind of a response when you see this press conference in the moment, but at the same time, you hold these titles that are above the other wrestlers in the locker room. You are the people that set the culture of this locker room in many ways, that you are looked upon, that you just spoke at a talent meeting as representatives of this company, and you're getting involved in this. Whose fault it was, who threw the first punch, you were involved in it. And that, to me, and for Punk too, he's not an EVP, but he is your top star. And these are the people that are kind of the pillars of this company. And this is just, it's a very unprofessional look for the company, regardless of tangible benefits down the road of turning this into business. In the immediate, this is a locker room that to the public has just gone through weeks of kind of been, you know, fanning the flames. And then these guys just threw gasoline on it on Sunday. And it looks like a locker room in chaos, whether that's an appropriate enough term or description or not. I think it is.
Absolutely, it is.
I don't know how you can look at this as not. I'm sure there would be people in the locker room that it's very harmonious, but this is, you know, these are your four players. And when you're getting a physical altercation with these kinds of details attached to it, it is something where it's gone too far. And now meaningful punishment, I do feel, needs to be doled out.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Absolutely. I mean, not just, you know, to show the public, I think you have a control of your roster, but to show the talent in the back, the young talent in the back, you know, that very much looks to all four of those men as, you know, role models, that no matter how big of a star you are, like, this is not a way to dish out your conflict resolution. And more importantly, you know, in the past, we may have seen altercations like this benefit the participants involved. We may still see that, you know, if they go ahead and turn this into a big story involving everybody. Certainly, it's worked out for MJF. You know, he's got a big, he received the biggest spot on the pay-per-view last night as a result of whatever had happened between him. I mean, you're showing a sign. You need to show your younger roster that it doesn't matter how big of a star you are. You cannot act out like this. It's this whole year, I think, has been like kind of full of stories such as this. You know, we talk about Sasha and Naomi, of course, not following company orders, I suppose, and going off on their own. And you get to see two different philosophies of how to handle it. You know, in Sasha and Naomi's case, the company kind of turned on them pretty quick. Will AEW do the same with this?
That I don't see happening. I don't see any kind of public, I would be very surprised if you saw it. I would not rule out the idea of if there was a suspension, if they announced it on the air. But the idea of like burying your talent, I would imagine 0% chance of that happening on, mm-hmm. on AEW. Also brought up in the press conference that I thought was notable, Brandon Thurston asked Tony how the pay-per-view was trending, and I'm sure he did not envision getting the answer that Tony gave, which he did like address the buys. He doesn't expect it to hit last year's figure of 205,000. There's no exact number, but it will probably be the second highest all-out number in history, and brought up that, you know, we were not the only wrestling show this weekend. We ended up being the third wrestling show this weekend. It was more challenging in the marketplace. And he said, we're going to continue to bring the fight. And I've got a lot of money to fight with. This is not a game to me. It's my life. And he was hoping to have the all-time record for All Out. So he was very much, and you have to be if you were in his shoes to be shooting to beat last year's number. But says this will be overall their biggest year in pay-per-view revenue. That is worth noting. They have five shows versus four last year. But this number
but
will
even
be,
without Forbidden Door, like, weren't they on track to beating last year?
Yes. Yeah. Like, again, up till All Out, all numbers were up from the year prior. Plus you add on Forbidden Door. So you're right. They would have been ahead anyway, just based on buys that we have seen. But it expects this to be similar to other pay-per-views this year. Comparing this one to around Double or Nothing this year, which Brandon has at 155,000 buys, and then ended this by saying, when I compared myself to Jim Crockett Promotions this weekend, which he did on his chat with the Observer site, I think I got a taste of the same medicine Jim Crockett Promotions took, but I have a lot more fucking money than Jim Crockett did. I'm serious. I'm not going to sit back and take this fucking shit.
Oh my goodness. I feel like Tony Khan kind of has a bit of Dominic Mysterio energy in him, like in that, you know, like he seems kind of very innocent, and then it's kind of adorable when he gets angry in pro wrestler mode. Anytime Tony Khan like starts cutting promos, so to speak, like I don't exactly know how to take it. Like I think on the one hand, maybe he's playing things up for the media. On the other hand, maybe he truly kind of sees this as a slight. For him though, to kind of blame this NXT World Collide show, do you think he was putting blame on that, or do you think he was putting blame also on Clash at the Castle?
I think it was overall, like, I do not believe Clash at the Castle was a counter to this. I mean, it was something that, I mean, they have talked about the fact that they have been working on this deal in Wales for months. But Worlds Collide, I mean, this was a show, let's remember, this show got put onto the schedule, what, 2 weeks after Heatwave. So they had just done that special, and they built the whole concept around these NXT UK titles, including spoiling their own tournament in order to promote Tyler Bate taking on Bron Breakker. So, I mean, this did feel very rushed and put together, to the fact that you spoiled your own final episodes of NXT UK because they only wrapped up the tournament and they gave away the champion, the winner, weeks ago.
But to suggest that, like, I think to suggest that Worlds Collide took any sort of significant bite out of All Out's buys, I think is just a bad excuse for why this year is not doing better than last year. To me, it's insignificant. You know, if your plan was to order All Out anyway, I don't think you're saying, oh, Worlds Collide is on, I can watch it on Peacock, I got my wrestling fill this week, I'm not going to watch Punk versus Moxley. I see a very small percentage of people saying that.
I don't think Worlds Collide is making the difference there. But you could look at the weekend, that if I am a wrestling fan and I've only got so many hours this weekend that I'm dedicating to, I'm not doing two nights of pro wrestling, and WWE's got the big show on, I'm watching one show, and it's the show that cost me $5 on Peacock to watch, or $10 if I have the ad tier, versus a $50 pay-per-view. You've made my decision for me. If I want to watch on Sunday, it's like I do have a cheaper option to get a three-hour show, and I don't want to sit down for 8 hours to watch pro wrestling. So, you know, it didn't help. It certainly didn't help.
Jim Crockett? Or
yes.
Bill, was it a Jim Crockett move, though, to like have a counter program, if you could even call it a counter program, the day before in a different part of the world? Like, I don't think so.
I think they're looking
more
at
fair.
I guess they're just looking at the idea of, like, you know, last minute. Again, I don't think this is
Worlds Collide. Yes, I can agree. But like, I also don't think Worlds Collide did any sort of significant damage to All Out. So like, for Tony Khan to respond to like Worlds Collide as some sort of major slight that he's going to vow revenge on, I thought was kind of silly.
Well, it's regardless of what the intent is, like, I feel this is not going to be the last time we see this. I think there's going to be plenty of counter programming.
Marathon, and, not a race.
Well, and both sides, they know the game that they're in, and this is the game that's going to be played, and it's probably, and it is, it's a dirty game that is going on. Do you feel that, compare this to the discussion we just had about Paul Levesque and kind of just laughing off AEW and Tony Khan giving this kind of a response to AEW. Do you think that one method is superior to the other? Do you think that Tony Khan is, for lack of a better term, selling this too much rather than...
I would argue it's like it's more to the benefit of Tony Khan as sort of like this kind of underground, like more catering more to a niche audience to like use words like that than it is for Triple H to officially acknowledge the competition. And I think you kind of saw it in the responses to, you know, the average person who doesn't follow AEW and only might have heard, you know, Ariel Helwani's interview with Triple H. It continues to maybe like talk about AEW as sort of like almost like a relatively small sort of insignificant part of your competition. Whereas Tony Khan's response in the press conference really treated this like it was the biggest war he was about to enter, you know, taking on AEW with all the money that he has. So the responses I think were appropriate, but I do feel like the energy from Paul Levesque made WWE feel bigger, and which they are.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The only other notes from the press conference, Tony Khan would not comment on Malakai Black and what his kind of a sign-off meant when he got onto the stage, which I guess that's notable too, the fact he would not comment on it. We shall see. And it was also reported on Wrestling Observer Radio that Christian Cage was injured going into All Out, so that looks to have played a factor in the match being so short. And we've seen him with that arm brace on for the last couple of weeks. So that is the latest on Christian. MJF will speak on Dynamite, and that's what they have advertised, along with Yuta and Garcia and the trios match with Death Triangle against Best Friends and Orange Cassidy. They have not announced anything involving Punk or your trios champions, and there was no Being the Elite that came out on Monday.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
There you have it. That is all the news. Are we ready to move on to Raw after our 45-minute intro?
I suppose so. Yeah.
This was the much bigger story than Raw. Raw, I think we could summarize.
Hey, I don't know about this, man. Come on, again. If you're a Dominic Mysterio fan, this was a big show.
Well, we were going to get right to it. Edge comes out at the beginning, and he brings up Dominic and has known Dominic since he was 5 years old. I've stayed at your home in San Diego. Me and Ray have gotten tattoos together. Actually, they got ink together. And he talked down Dom after his first match, as he was getting ready last year for his first match in front of a live crowd. You felt like a nephew to me, but Dominic doesn't feel the same way about me. He apologized for the spear a couple of weeks ago, and he didn't come back here to get between father and son. And he takes the blame for the Judgment Day trying to ruin the Mysterios' lives. But Dominic, I'm looking at you not as a 5-year-old kid, but as a WWE superstar, and I'm going to beat your ass. So he calls out Dominic, and Ray comes out, and he's holding his heart. He's just, Edge, please. And he knows that Dominic messed up, and he's asking for an apology on behalf of Dominic. Edge says Dominic is old enough to stand for his actions. So that prompts Rhea Ripley to come out saying she saw the potential in Dominic and she made him into a man. And there walks out Dominic, all in black, hair is slicked back. Dude, I just thought this looked perfect.
Yeah, it's not quite, you know, full on Eddie Guerrero LWO with a goatee or anything, but I think for the Judgment Day, it is perfect. I suppose like membership in the Judgment Day requires like, you know, a significant amount of hair gel in your, I guess, I don't know, entrance package here. But he looks awesome. Like, he looks awesome because of how he looked before. Like, in our enjoyment of Dominic Mysterio, there is like a little hint of irony, but I also think this is actually great storytelling.
So Ray is pleading for his son to snap out of it. Come make things right with Edge. And Ray just says, I don't want to be a part of this. And he goes down to the floor. He looks at Dominic. Dominic won't even look at him. The crowd is chanting Eddie's son at Dominic. And Ray just walks to the back, a defeated man. And Edge is awaiting him to come into the ring when Balor and Priest storm the ring, attacking him. And Dominic joins in, chop blocking the knee. And then Ray returns, and they won't let him help Edge. Ripley then drills him, sends him into the steps. There's a South of Heaven on Edge, and then a coup de grace onto the chair on top of Edge, and Dominic leaves with the Judgment Day, and the big attack was on Edge's knee. As it almost felt like this was like his latest write-off, but he will be coming back next week, where they will do Dominic versus Edge to combat Monday Night Football's return.
Right, yeah. Can you imagine that sentence, you know, like three weeks ago even. But to me, this is now the hottest program in at least Raw, maybe even in the WWE. I thought that this was a tremendous follow-up to the angle coming off of Saturday, starting off with a great monologue from Edge, who I think very clearly and very cleanly in concise fashion outlined his history with the Mysterio family and with Dominic. It all sounded incredibly real because I have no doubt that a lot of what he said was real. I'm sure he did shoot like pea shooters in the back with Dominic. He probably did actually, you know, stay at the Mysterio's home whenever they toured in San Diego and just kind of like
got inked together.
Yeah. And just the inclusion of some of those details, I think already injects this story with so much depth off the bat because you're playing off of reality. And he accomplished all of this in the span of what, like this kind of 3 to 4 minute promo. Grew up with the kid. He looked at him like a nephew. And I'm going to treat him like a man now because he's of age and I'm going to beat his ass. Like Edge, I thought was great. You had, you know, you sort of our follow up and our introduction to Rey Mysterio's mentality in the midst of all this. And he, I think very believably, plays a father who is torn. There's nothing in the world he will do to ever turn on his son. So he still will have all the faith of the world in his son. While at the same time, he's incredibly apologetic to what is arguably like, you know, what feels like a close personal friend now in Edge. So I think his motivation is actually very full of character and full of story and depth. And I thought he did really well. I also love how restrained they were with Dominic's involvement in the physical altercations. They didn't have Dominic directly attack Ray here. Nor did he, you know, deliver the killing blow directly to Edge with the chair. I think that might be to come, but for today, this to me is almost like it's a classic Star Wars turning to the dark side type of story where they're still keeping small hints of hope within Dominic that there's still good within him. And they're slowly turning him, or at least like slowly playing with sort of like, his conversion to the dark side, so to speak.
It's probably a great person in Edge to have as his opponent next week, mm-hmm. because Dominic has to change his style dramatically to work as a heel. The big handicap though is that, you know, as a heel, like he works fine as a babyface and he kind of like plays off of Ray in a tag. In a singles match, like, dude, he is dwarfed by these guys on the roster. Like, he is a small guy. And
he has height, though. He has, like, a decent height. You know, like, him next to Balor is, like, I believe he's taller than Finn Balor.
Well, I just... But
he
next
doesn't
to
have
Edge,
the body.
It's very interesting to see how they will, adjust that part. Because we've never seen this guy work as a heel.
But he's also got, like, you know, the 4-on-1 advantage. So I think that'll be enough to probably, you know... make the match work. There's like Dominic Mysterio, I think for a lot of people is just like ill-equipped, I will say, to become like sort of a WWE wrestler because there's anti-charisma about him, which obviously, John, you know, you and I are big fans of. And as a babyface, like it really at best makes him a generic babyface that, you know, could get by with like tag team matches with his dad. As a heel, though, I actually think it's a perfect type of performance for this role where he has to basically be emotionless as he turns off his mind as he's watching his father get beaten up. Like, I think they perfectly crafted a character for Dominic's limitations as an actor, for instance.
Earlier in the day, the Miz and Ciampa are in the parking lot. They will not talk. They will not even say Dexter Lumis's name. And they're doing this whole interview. And then they happen to notice next to them a car tipped over.
Yeah.
They were walking through the parking lot. This didn't stand out at all. And then at the end of the interview, they look to their right and look at that. Well, this car is tipped over.
They were walking towards the car, weren't they? Like, this is, we later learned this was their car. And we're supposed to. It was insinuated that Dexter Lumis did this.
I would assume so. Yeah. I don't think it was Maurice.
I don't think so either. So Lumis can flip cars over now.
Yeah. Yeah.
He can appear like to, the Miz, but not the audience. He can also, he has super strength.
Did you notice, another interesting note about the Dexter Lumis character? So last week when he appeared in the crowd, Kevin Patrick came to The Miz and said, "What did you see in the crowd?" Meaning no one else was supposed to be able to see Dexter Lumis except Miz. Now,
didn't acknowledge it either, I believe.
It was weird. But then here, Sarah Schreiber says, "We noticed Dexter Lumis in the backseat of your car when you left last week." So there, we could see him, but we could not see him in the crowd. Is that right?
Yeah, so I think this week they just decided to renege on like the idea that only the audience can see Dexter Lumis, but the people in the WWE cast can't.
So Miz isn't crazy.
He's not crazy. No, absolutely not. No, like that was an aspect of the show that I was honestly surprised that they would go to, because it was comically, like, it requires too much suspension of disbelief for what I'm sensing is a more realistic, you know, WWE now under Paul Levesque. So yeah, this week they're not doing really any supernatural, you can't see him, but we can type of stuff, except for the fact that Lumis can now flip cars over.
We're taking away your invisible nature, but we're giving you a different superpower. Okay.
Yeah, you got it's super a fair trade. Now. Yeah.
Then it was time for a fatal four-way number one contenders match. And the first team out is Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods, who I just watched get murdered by the Viking Raiders on Friday.
Where were they?
I have no idea.
They didn't want them to be decimated in the end of this segment, but you're right. The ranking system.
Booking-wise, yeah. I guess it's a plus that they were not part of this, but logically this made no sense to have these guys in a number one contenders match.
Nor Doudrop,
They brought up the fact, oh, we saw them last night and they lost to the tag champions, and here they, what was that? Was that a non-title match? Or was that a title
today?
Match?
Today, you mean?
Yeah, with Raquel and Aaliyah.
I don't know. Anyway. I'm not sure.
So we had
probably non-title. You're probably right.
Alpha Academy, Los Lotharios, and the Street Profits. So, dude, this went like two segments, and it was actually, look at the talent in here. This was a good match. Good. This was really good. Dawkins continues to really stand out for me in a big way. He hit a pounce, sending Kofi over the top, and then followed with a tope con hero. Ford and Gable had a great spot in here with the American Automatic and Ford landing on his feet. Umberto with a moonsault landing on the feet of Ford. You know, it's a good match. They're going along. From the Heavens is delivered to Otis, and then Gable applies the ankle lock when all of a sudden Braun Strowman makes his return, and he is controlling his pants because he decided to go with a red color scheme, red jeans.
Control your pants?
I had nothing. So he comes out and he just destroys everyone. This felt like the cruiserweight division in WCW.
Yeah.
Got a strong reaction, but just murdered all these guys and left them laying. There was no outcome in this match. I don't know why we had to call it a number one contenders match. We could have just done a four-way match, I guess. And then he clears the announcer's desk and power slams Dawkins through the desk. Came in, did the Hogan routine, cupping the ears, and just posed for the audience. So, I mean, this got over with the crowd, but I was enjoying the match, and it just felt like, wow, these eight just got sacrificed for this dude, but he's the guy coming in with a push.
he's this week's, you know, big return in the series of big returns since Paul Levesque took over.
Is this a big return?
I think so. I think more significant than any of the others so far. He's a bigger star than Karrion Kross, a bigger star than Hit Row, bigger star than Dexter Lumis, bigger star than, well, Johnny Gargano felt bigger, and maybe that's just to us, but Braun Strowman is without a doubt the biggest star of all of them. So, you know, he comes out here and the man is jacked. Like, he's bigger than before. He's more cut than before, if that was possible. And you see him in a ring like this, and it makes you wonder why they ever let a guy like that go, because he seems like, you know, such a perfect fit for a WWE product. I like the return. I hate that they did this to the tag team division in the midst of a match that was, you know, starting to renew my interest in the division. You had like fresh pairings here between the New Day with the Street Profits, with what was the other team? I'm sorry, I forget.
Los Lotharios, Alpha Academy.
Like, everybody, like, it was a good match. Everybody got big spots. Ford had some big spots with Otis. Like, it was a good match. And it was just sad to see them, you know, cruiserweight division this whole thing when they could have just as easily booked a throwaway 24/7 gimmick for Strowman to do this with.
Or even so, two of the teams here. I mean, it's like no one's taking Los Lotharios all that seriously. But, I mean, it was just like all eight of them. That by the end of this, it's like, okay, these are the geeks. And I don't look at the Street Profits as geeks. And I don't think you want to position Kingston and Woods as geeks. But that's certainly how everybody felt at the end of this. But, I mean, these were your sacrificial lambs to get over who they believe is, the bigger star that they are going to be putting in a much higher position than any of these eight.
Yeah.
Raquel Rodriguez and Aaliyah against Nikki A.S.H. and Doudrop. The best line from Jimmy Smith. There's a reason for the smile on Raquel Rodriguez's face after winning the tag titles last week.
No, so thank you.
Finally, there's some justification for her happiness.
So they're very aware of, like,
yeah, this was very tongue in cheek, I thought.
But they're so aware of, like, you know, the fact that it's very unusual to see this person smiling this much. So. I mean, at this point, it's intentional, because if Triple H wanted to change it, he would have already. Yeah. I mean,
stop smiling.
I can't think of any reason for her to exaggerate the smile so much other than to potentially set up a heel turn, maybe.
Well, they explained here that Raquel did a lot of the heavy lifting in the tournament as compared to Aaliyah. So they are going with that story. Damage control is shown watching in the back. And the ending here saw Aaliyah take out Nikki A.S.H. on the floor, so she did her part, and it allowed Raquel to hit the Tejana Bomb onto Doudrop and pin her. 3:44, a quick win, and they would be setting up a match with them for next week. This was really short, and I think they know that they're going to be breaking up Nikki and Doudrop, and it's just we can beat them like drums until we're ready to do the breakup.
And you need an establisher for, you know, your new champions to at least, I don't know, cement the idea that they're somewhat significant. But nonetheless, the crowd was pretty cold for it. And I think much of it is because Raquel and Aaliyah really are a team with pretty little character development and personality, which I think made their win so shocking. You know, like there was very little momentum, I think, put behind them compared to Damage Control.
A sit down interview would have gone a lot further for these two than a 3-minute match.
Yeah, which I think, again, tells me that their biggest story is when they lose the belt, you know, like that's when their real storyline will begin. They make slight mention of the illegal woman thing, but that, you know, they would cement it a bit more later on with Damage Control.
Yes. So they are going with that. Megan caught up with Ray. He loves his son. He needs to speak with him in private. Judgment Day is trying to ruin his life. Edge is like family to me, but he says he will never put his hands on his son. So this is very much Brett being asked about a match with Owen, and never will I absolutely, positively ever wrestle my brother.
Oh, you're going to get a very, I think, dramatic, you know, beatdown, like of Dominic destroying his father and Ray refusing to fight back.
And Judgment Day deserves to get their ass handed to them, and he will take on any member of Judgment Day minus Dominic tonight. And that would happen later. Austin Theory's out, and he is still selling the punch from Tyson Fury. And hey, says,
by the way, sorry to cut you off, but like prior to this, they were showing clips from Clash at the Castle of significant moments, and they dedicated a whole thing to Sheamus getting a standing ovation.
Yeah, they did a lot of recaps from Clash at the Castle, like just isolating the Sheamus spot, Drew's ovation that he had. So they did like quite a lot of video from it. And I think I've said it before, like coming off these pay-per-views, I'm fine with like, you know, putting a lot of emphasis on the big event that we just had and really.
Especially when it's a sold out crowd that looks like that.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
So Austin Theory says that despite getting punched out by Tyson Fury, Crown Jewel was a success. Just kidding. Clash at the Castle was a success. Like he caught himself just as he called it the wrong name. But he's still going to be a future champion. And when he gets knocked down, he gets back up. I was waiting for Ace Steel to say, "You get the fuck up." What a week for that guy. He is glad that Reigns is champion because Drew embarrassed himself and then he stumbles over his words, but just grabs his jaw in pain. And I don't care if he legit, it seemed like he was stumbling, but it was perfect for this.
Oh yeah. He turned a negative into a positive here.
It was great. It's almost like it should have been this way.
He used it to further his frustrations at the crowd for throwing him off and by making his jaw hurt something or something. But like it all to me, more importantly, demonstrated to the audience and also I'm sure to the people in the back that this is a guy who knows how to handle himself in front of live TV. Even when he does flub, he knows how to save it.
Kevin Owens confronts him and jokes about him getting knocked out by Tyson Fury. And he remembers that you found your first name so I can call you Austin again. And he hates arrogant and delusional people and says that either Roman or Drew would have beaten you at Clash because I've been in the ring with them. So you should be thankful you got knocked out. Fury calls him jealous because you haven't won a title in years, nor have you ever won Money in the Bank. And Owens brings up the fact that Drew couldn't beat him several weeks ago, and he had Roman beat 18 months ago. And the only reason he didn't win the Money in the Bank is because he wasn't in the match. And with that, Owens calls on the ref and says, now it's time to fight. And we get a impromptu match between the two.
He didn't really call on the ref. He was like, this is the time when, you know, am I the only person who's aware that like a referee will probably walk in right now? And as he says it, the referee comes in. I'm really loving this sort of like very self-aware, like meta, you know, Truman Show-esque type of Kevin Owens, who is, I guess, carrying on from like the Elias Ezekiel thing. He's the only guy who realizes that he is on a scripted show. He's the only person who knows Ezekiel is Elias. He makes allusions to real world things that other people don't know about, like Austin Theory getting his first name back. He called him, he says he even said, like, you know what, you used to be the handpicked guy, referring to,
yeah,
you know,
we got a subtle Vince reference here that you were the handpicked future.
Yeah, so it's a great direction to take him, sort of like, and to make him a babyface because he very much is the real guy on the roster anyway.
So they had a really long match. Owens is attacking his jaw with the forearms and hits a senton, but lands on Theory's knees. And then Owens headbutts Theory off the turnbuckle, hitting a swanton. Owens lands a super kick. The pop-up gets avoided. And then Owens runs his shoulder into the post. And Theory does the spot that Owens has done in the past, where he just gets thrown with the back of his head hitting the steps. I hope that Kevin Owens just has some trick to do this thing because it looks fucking brutal.
Mm-hmm.
So
you would hope. Yeah.
I hope so. It looks awful. I was like, retire this spot, but I don't know. So he beats the count into the ring, makes his comeback, Fisherman Buster, hits the pop-up powerbomb and stuns Theory to win this match in 16 minutes and 56 seconds. This was, it was a long one.
But, you know, Kevin Owens has been put in this role recently, right? You know, like the sort of like, what was this, like 9 o'clock?
This was in the second hour. Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, a significantly long match on the show. And they all seem to follow a bit of formula. You know, somebody comes up there, cuts a promo. Kevin Owens interrupts. They get into a bit of a promo battle, which have, you know, been pretty consistently good. And then they engage in like a pretty long wrestling match, which again, are usually pretty good because Kevin Owens is a spectacular wrestler and seems to drag a lot of great stuff out of his opponents as well. I think this was a pretty strong win for him against a guy like Theory who gets a lot of screen time. And they're doing a really good job of building him back up, I think, Kevin Owens.
Yeah, this is a match that, you know, at a different period, you would assume that they would just do some cheap DQ or count out at the end. But
Theory
got a clean finish
would most
afterwards.
Likely win. Like if this was a year ago, for instance.
Yeah, but it was a nice match. It was, you know, it got two segments and another strong win for Kevin Owens, who they're keeping very strong. Shriver spooks Miz as she walks up from behind. It's like, I'd be a little annoyed too. Like, Miz has given this woman plenty of time on the day of my match. Like, what more do you need to ask me? I've got a cage match. And anyway, he's better than Lashley. That's what we learned in this promo. Damage Control are out to gloat about their win at Clash at the Castle. They are taking control, and Io says that they are taking the tag titles next week, and this is when Dakota Kai notes that she was not the legal woman in the match last week, and apparently nobody noticed over the whole last week. They pointed it out here.
They pointed it out here, but I also felt like it was kind of downplayed in that, like, they didn't even show a replay of it. Like, in the replay that they did show, they kind of hid that point of the match.
Yeah. So,
part of me wonders. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly not played up last week. Like, Dakota played it up, but was that her just acting on her own? I would be surprised if she was just pointing that out as audibly as she did last week. But yeah, they made no big deal out of it. But it just felt like this was our way to set up a rematch for next week. So Bayley brings up her win over Bianca Belair, and that prompts Belair to come out and challenges Bayley on the spot, but Bayley is not working on Labor Day. So Belair says that it took all three of you to beat me, and unless Bayley has this title, you control nothing. So this was not set up for next week, but is a match happening in the future.
I enjoyed the segment. You know, I thought Bayley did a great job of gaslighting Bianca Belair into, you know, convincing us that her wanting to face Bayley is just Bianca's ego acting up because she can't handle one loss, rather than, you know, the reality, which seems to be Bayley's own cowardice at not wanting to accept the match right now. So we don't know when it will be, but I mean, relatively soon, I suppose, and on Bayley's own time. So yeah,
the next pay-per-view is not till October 8th, so that's a long time. But yeah, maybe that pay-per-view will take shape in the next week or so. Schreiber is with Johnny Gargano. He's excited to remind people what he's capable of in the ring. Theory interrupts and says, since you've returned, you're just Johnny talking. It's like, dude, I've been on two shows since I've been back. Gargano agrees with this assessment, though, and he's going to wrestle next week in Portland. Rey Mysterio against Damian Priest. He is the chosen Judgment Day member. Priest was in control until, you guessed it, ran his shoulder into the post, and Ray delivers kicks after catching him in the corner. Judgment Day joins him ringside, including Dominic, and Ray manages a seated senton and quebrada, staring at his son, and then Priest throws him into the turnbuckle. Ray spins off the shoulders into a DDT, and then Ray stops Priest with a knee and hits a Hurricane Rana off the top. Ray misses the 619, setting up a spin kick from Damian, lifts him up for the razor's edge, but that's countered with a Rana, and Ray goes for the 619, but Dominic stands in his way on the apron, and the crowd booed. And this allowed Balor and Ripley to distract Ray, and Priest nails Ray south of heaven and pins Ray in 1332.
Yeah, I thought it was a good match, you know, in particular because I think Ray's character motivation was pretty well conveyed throughout. He walked to the ring very sad at not having his son by his side. He started the match off really, like, furiously angry at Damian Priest. And then, you know, they did a good job of continuously showing Dominic's sort of like ability to distract Ray just by being there throughout the match. So I've really been into the storyline.
The Judgment Day stood over Ray, and Ripley, who's very much taken a leadership role in the Judgment Day,
at least when it relates to Dominic, like, she seems to be the one spearheading the Dominic influence.
Well, that's going to be the Judgment Day story, like, right, going ahead. So I'd be curious, like, if this seems to be like she will be like speaking on behalf of the group. So she says that there's only one man left in their way, and Dominic is going to send Edge back into retirement next week. And what Poppy wants, Poppy gets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What stood out to me on this show is how much the crowd remembers the sort of Eddie Guerrero, you know, custody storyline. And I'm sure it's something that they're just kind of like waiting for Dominic to actually speak about, to reveal about how he felt throughout all that, and how somehow, you know, Eddie will become a bigger part of this whole thing.
I lied on the A&E biography. I hated it. It was so demeaning. What are you doing to me, Dad? I am not old enough to be taking part in this television program.
I can't wait.
Why, Poppy? Why? Schreiber's with Bobby Lashley. He says he's more dangerous in the cage with Miz than Miz is outside the cage with Loomis. Strowman is they catch up to him. He's back. He's going to be on SmackDown on Friday. Cool. High five to the brand split.
Well, yeah. I mean, I suppose there's some justification for some of these guys like going to different brands because the championships are consolidated right now.
I guess.
You're like, yeah, the brand split pretty much doesn't
exist. I don't care. It's fine. Put them on SmackDown. They recapped Riddle and Rollins, and they were off the show other than these post-match interviews that they did after Clash. And Sarah Schreiber asks Riddle in the locker room, "How's your head?" And sorry, she says, "Where's your head at after that loss?" "Where's my head at?" I thought like Basement Jacks was going to start playing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
He said, "Rollins stomped my brains into the canvas. That's where my head is." But he wants another match against Rollins ASAP. So Rollins was told about this rematch. And Rollins, justifiably so, is like, "No, why? Why? I beat him. There was no controversy. I'm moving on." I thought this was not, I'm sure this was designed. It's like, "Oh, you're ducking Riddle?" It's like, shouldn't that be how a feud ends? You beat the guy and then you move on? Why would he give him a rematch?
Sure. Well, I mean, for the spirit of competition, but you're right. Yeah,
how many times do I have to beat you? What, four times? Five times? Like,
Agreed. But you know, this, unfortunately, I think, or fortunately, we are going to get that rematch. It's going to be a bit of a journey for, I guess, Riddle to justify the rematch at this point.
Next week, it's the return of Monday Night Football. And last year, the week-to-week difference when Monday Night Football came back meant a 10% drop in viewership and an 18% drop in 18 to 49. So we will see what impact it has, given that Raw has been up this year. So it's Raquel and Aaliyah against Io Sky and Dakota Kai for the tag titles, Dominic against Edge and Johnny Gargano in action.
Mm-hmm. I would assume the tag title match is the main event.
Yeah, possibly, unless there's something else. You could go with Edge and Dominic. I mean, that show did really well in Toronto that you built all around an Edge match.
Does football go all the way till 11?
Yeah, it's okay. It might be over by then.
Hmm.
Depends on the game, I guess. They're going against Denver and Seattle next week.
Right.
Will you have a split screen?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Bobby Lashley and The Miz in a steel cage match for the United States Championship. I swear to God, this match was just the longest thing in the world.
In comparison to, you know, some of the later matches last night, I didn't have that same feeling.
I think you enjoyed this Raw a lot more than me. I got into mm-hmm. the Dominic stuff. This to me was the Raw that has felt the longest of the Hunter Raws for me. Like, this felt like a very,
Did you watch it in real time?
Close to it. Yeah.
Cause I zipped through commercials. So maybe that's why.
This was why I don't have like all these negatives on the show. It was just a long show for me to watch. At the beginning, Corey Graves mentioned he dropped a line from Pat Stay, who died tragically over the weekend, the Canadian rapper.
Oh, wow.
So he was.
I didn't even know about that. Wow.
Miz attacks him with the United States belt before the bell rings, and then Ciampa gets involved, and they take Lashley to the floor before the bell rings. We come back, the match is in progress, and Miz is attacking the arm until Lashley starts to fight back, and this had been the focus of their attack before the break on the arm. And Miz tries to escape, but with Ciampa's help, but Lashley pulls him back. Lashley cannot climb the fence as Ciampa gets a chair and starts smashing at his knee. So Miz, capitalizing, hits the awful Busaiku knee. That, I guess that's the charm, that Miz does Daniel's Bryan spots like awful. But this looked like a guy that was like trying to jump into a pool with a bad cannonball or something. Like, it looked terrible.
Like, he really should be the leader of the Jericho Appreciation Society of sports entertainers. Like, he is the quintessential sports entertainer. I'd love to see him attempt a cattle mutilation.
Well, we came back from the second break, and he's got the label lock applied on him. And Lashley gets up to his feet, runs Miz into the cage. Graves, who, like, Lashley was like, the arm was like being sold at some points and others not so much. And Graves says his arm's got to be made of adamantium.
Yeah.
It's just coming back to full strength. It's amazing how these arms work. So Miz climbs. He's hit with a superplex. Lashley misses a spear going into the cage and is hit with a skull-crushing finale. Lashley kicks out. He's got a bit of a reaction, but not to the extent of like a skull-crushing finale kick out. Ciampa then shuts the door on Lashley's head, which in another era set world class on fire. Here it was Lashley no-selling it, and then he slams the door on Ciampa's head, and then Miz repeatedly slams the door on Lashley's head while the camera cuts every time the door hits Lashley's head. I don't know if this would have – I would have loved to have seen this direction for Gordy slamming the cage on Kerry's head. Miz goes to climb over, but then he sees Dexter Lumis slide out from underneath the ring, and he crawls back into the cage where he is speared, and Lashley pins him. And then Lashley closes the door, leaving Miz in the ring with Lumis as he applies the head and arm choke, and he chokes out Miz as the show ends. So tune in next week to see if the Miz survives.
Yeah, yeah, and we can all see this one. The audience can see this one. The commentators could see this one.
What's happening to him? Is he collapsing? Choking. Why is he choking? Is he having an allergic reaction?
Yeah, I enjoyed this, John. You know, I thought from a storyline perspective, which is I think how I tend to watch Raw more so than like an in-ring, you know, exciting wrestling match perspective. Like I thought everything was sound. The fact that Miz. It is really stupid of a plan to, like, you know, book yourself in a steel cage match against Bobby Lashley in order to escape from Dexter Lumis. But I guess the man was confident enough in his abilities against Bobby Lashley. And I suppose also with, you know, Ciampa ringside, the 2-on-1 advantage was for him enough sanctuary from Dexter Lumis. But nonetheless, I thought, like, you know, the 2-on-1 advantage was played well to serve up Bobby Lashley as an underdog. And by the time you got to the Lumis surprise, I thought it was pretty well done. It ended up being Miz trapped in the cage with Dexter. And to me, jury's still out on like how successful of a character Dexter Lumis might be like long term. But tonight, I thought they did a good job, you know, surprising everybody with that wonderful overhead camera shot where he just kind of pulled himself from under the ring and then creating a show ending scenario with Miz trapped again with Dexter.
Yeah, I was fatigued by the end of this show, and having like a, you know, 25 minute Miz Lashley main event was trying on me. But I thought Owens and Theory had a very nice match on the show. The Dominic stuff was good. It was a good follow up to the angle on Saturday with the breakup as well. So I think that story, and more importantly, I think they have a direction for that story as well. This does not feel like they're just going by the seat of their pants week by week and where they're going to go. It feels like they have this mapped out where, you know, it's Edge next week. Obviously, the big match way down the road is with Ray at some point.
I would contend that, like, everything on the show right now feels like it has a long-term direction. You know, not just stuff involving Edge and Ray and Dominic. I really enjoyed the Edge and Ray and Dominic stuff. I think everybody like has like a very defined role. By far, it's the best thing that Ray and Dominic has had to do on the show. It's by far the best thing that Judgment Day has been given. And potentially it could be the best storyline that Edge has been given, at least in, you know, relatively sort of like, you know, recent history. So I think that's in really good shape. And I really am looking forward to seeing that unfold. I was not a fan of seeing the tag team division basically served up to Braun Strowman. So that was probably the biggest negative on the show. But the match itself was good. And, you know, Dexter Lumis, I'm not the biggest fan of him, but I think they're doing a good job of serving that story up. This week, with a bit of course correction and taking away the not being able to see him element of it, I think helped. And Kevin Owens continues to be somebody that they're pushing very strongly in successful fashion.
You can certainly say, like, they are creating a lot of top, you know, like options like that don't necessarily have to be just for the sole purpose of beating Roman, but like you're creating like a main event mix now that consists of like you still have Drew in a pretty high position. You've elevated Owens. I think Rollins has benefited. He's coming off the win with Riddle. You're trying to get Riddle up to that level. Karrion Kross is still in there. Now Braun, you figure, is going to be in a pretty big spot coming back as well.
I also imagine like somebody like Johnny Gargano in a few months' time might not be that far away, you know, from reaching that status too under Triple H. On the women's side of things, I think, you know, Damage Control, since they've come back, have completely reinvigorated the division. Everything that, you know, has taken place with them feels relatively fresh between the tag teams and also the main title mat program between Bianca Belair and Bayley. So I think that's in very good shape as well.
Okay, that was Raw. Let's go to any super chats and feedback.
No super chats, but in lieu of that, I encourage everybody on YouTube to go join, sign up for a membership. It is $8 US a month, and that's another way you can support us ongoing at Post Wrestling. youtube.com/postwrestling.
Okay, let's go to forum.postwrestling.com for the forum, and we start off with Benjamin, who gives some bullet points on Raw. KO is a gem. Dominic Mysterio's new baby goth Grease Lightning look is magical. Johnny Backstage will become Johnny Wrestling again next week. Damage Control's new entrance theme is a banger. Braun Strowman looks like a proud boy in his red pants. And no one is safe, especially towels, because he'll toss them. All right. He goes on here to talk about the CM Punk. That's like, CM Punk, if this matters at all. Nothing Punk said about Colt Cabana was about him being moved from AEW to ROH. He also accused MJF of shitting where he eats after he insulted and undermined all the EVPs and other talents in front of the company's CEO. The MJF stuff, I think you have to take that portion with a bit of a grain of salt. I mean, they're going to a program right there. I didn't see anyone really latch on to the MJF stuff like the other stuff.
On the Cabana front, I get the sense like Punk was just had a lot of lingering issues regarding, you know, Scott Colton, that it just seemed like it was a bit of a soapbox for him to get that out. And I feel really bad, like, for all the parties involved, or for particularly Scott Colton and his mother, the fact that, you know, his name was again dragged up here. And if you see the full clip, which you can find on Denise Salzado's capturing of the strike.
I would certainly recommend her channel, because like the audio was like all wonky on the AEW feed, and with Denise's, not only is like the audio at the regular level, you get to hear the responses and the questions from the reporters, and that adds some context.
And Punk was not prompted to give an answer about Scott Colton. We might be able to speculate, because it was Nick Hausman who had the first question, and maybe it was because Punk recognized
Nick, and he immediately drew a connection, believing that Nick is buddies with Colt Cabana, because he knew they did improv together. And Nick said, the two of us actually don't see eye to eye. We are not friends. So
it ruined his spot. Yeah,
he said, you ruined my spot. But
Punk clearly wanted to get this off his chest, I guess, over, you know, recent accusations anyway.
Yeah, it would probably at this point it needed to be addressed. Tony Khan did address it earlier this week, but
going to Benjamin's point, addressing it could have simply been saying I had nothing to do with it. Did he need to get into everything else regarding their lawsuit?
He didn't have to. He obviously wanted to, because he kept going back to it throughout the press conference. He was not done. Like, he was, once the lid was taken off, he was getting everything out.
Yeah. His, like, one of the more scathing lines was, there are two people in this world who have made the most money off of CM Punk. One of them is Vince McMahon, and the other was Scott Colton.
Yeah. That's
what he said.
And I don't think it's something you're going to see Cabana, you know, address or respond to.
I wonder if there are legal ramifications to some of that stuff. You know, at least, I don't know, we could speculate, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a good scene.
Okay.
Let's move on.
My turn. We go to Saeed from Vancouver, who says, to me, it seemed like WWE phoned in this episode of Raw. Looks like they didn't care as the opposition is on fire. It might be, I don't think they're paying any attention, like, while they're scripting this Raw to, you know, what happened with AEW and that press conference. I might be alone on this one, but I really enjoyed KO versus Theory. I don't think you're alone. I thought it was a good match.
It was a fine match. I'm not going to go over the moon with it, but it was fine.
Seems they love the backstage background segments with Nikki and Doudrop. In this edition, Nikki took her mask off, threw it at Doudrop, and walked off.
Okay, I missed that. I'm getting used to these backstage, the background segments. So a good observation by Saeed.
He says, dang it, they got me. Now I'm looking forward to next week to see Gargano's in-ring return and Dom versus Edge. I'll be watching Raw and Monday Night Football at the same time.
Jermaine from Chicago. Hope you guys enjoyed your wrestling-filled weekend. You two could run any target. Well, thank you. Jermaine. I felt like this was a show that would introduce new programs, but it seems like a filler show. The NFL is coming next week. Hunter needs to step up. But let's talk about the elephant in the room. Raw needs a world champion. With news that part-time Joe won't be around for a while, how would you get the Raw title back on the show? Not having a world champion on Raw makes the show lesser.
I knew some Roman slander was going to come in there from Jermaine, so thank you for delivering as always. How do we get the title back on the show? If they've kept it off from Drew at Clash at the Castle.
Let's be honest, though. Like, this last month, Raw has been the show that has been up. It has not been SmackDown, and Raw has been the show without the champion showing up. I think Roman showed up one of those weeks, but Raw is up consistently this last like 6 week period, and they're doing so without the title. Like, they're the ones benefiting from the buzz.
Yeah, and in some fashion, like, this is kind of taking things back to like the way things were before there were expected title defenses on TV every single week. They're making championship matches feel special by saving them for, you know, not even every single premium live event, but the occasional premium live event. And in its place, I think they're finally doing things like elevating secondary titles to make them feel as important as, you know, the world title. They're slowly doing that. I think that, you know, Gunther versus Sheamus was a big step in that direction. But if they're not going to, like, if they resist it in giving the championship to Drew, or even splitting the championships this past weekend to Drew, I don't see them taking the belt off of Roman anytime soon until Rumble or Mania or something like that.
Yeah, and I think it's much more important that you have your biggest stars that I think are going to make the bigger difference. Like, if you had like a Kevin Owens or a Theory win one of the titles and he's on Raw every week, is that going to necessarily take Raw to a much higher level? Just having that championship, I think it's, you know, it's the fact is your biggest star is who you want to have the title on. The title is on the biggest star right now in the company. But it's something that at some point I do feel they will address. I don't think it's going to be a case where they consolidate these titles forever, unless that's, you know, some big picture idea that maybe Paul Levesque believes that, like, the one title is the superior option. So there you go. Thank you to everybody with the feedback and all of you for joining us tonight for Rewind to Raw. We're back on Tuesday night, postwrestlingcafe.com. It is Rewind Away, covering Royal Rumble Raw from February 3rd, 1997, up on the WWE Network, which in a weird way, the next Raw after this was the Thursday Raw Thursday that we just reviewed not all that long ago. So this is right in the same time frame that we revisited before our Rewind Away break. So that is coming up on Tuesday. A lot of interesting news items going down that week in professional wrestling, and a notable edition of Raw, because this was the first 2-hour edition of Raw where they moved to 2 hours, and it ended up being a permanent move to 2 hours. Could you imagine? Are we going to have time for 2-hour Raws every single week? That's a lot of wrestling every Monday night, which also had 2-hour Nitros to contend with.
Oh, they're going to oversaturate the market.
Yes. Damn. Just wait. Just wait.
Yeah. Hey, also a new edition of WrestleNomics that just came out on a Monday, a slightly delayed version of WrestleNomics, because Brandon, of course, was in attendance at the press conference from hell, perhaps, is how it will be remembered. So Brandon will give his thoughts on All Out business, as well as the press conference comments from CM Punk, of course, and how it may affect AEW business going forward. So that is right now up on the free feed. So just scroll down if you're watching this or if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, where you can also, of course, subscribe to the Post Wrestling Cafe. $8 a month gets you all of this stuff. Or if you prefer Patreon, postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 a month. Better deal, but either way, however you like it, check it out.
Yes, postwrestlingcafe.com is where you can go. Lots of great stuff coming up this month, and some things we're cooking up as well to sample at the cafe in the near future. So there's a tease for you. We'll be back on Tuesday, and then Wednesday, it's the road trip edition of Rewind to Dynamite. That is it. Goodbye.